Good morning, everybody. I think we'll get started with the Community Corrections Partnership meeting for the date of February 20th, 2013. I've lost my a few days here. Wednesday, 8:30 a.m. And we will start with the, we're going to convene the CCP, and we will start with the roll call.
Chief PA.
Here.
Current Executive Officer McNally. District Attorney Green, present. Public Defender Moore.
Here.
Sheriff Youngblood.
Here.
Director Dr. Waterman.
Steve DeVore for Dr. Waterman.
Chief Williamson.
Here.
Director Alvarez.
Here.
Director Cheadle.
Pam Hollowell, for Director Cheadle.
Executive Director Corson.
Here.
Supervisor Perez.
Very present.
Director Smith.
Here.
Superintendent Lizardi Frazier.
Steve Sanders for Dr. Frazier.
And Division Director Maricol.
Here. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, and as always, we will look through the consent agenda, which there are none. So, as always, so we will move on. Item number one, it's the minutes from the CCP meeting from November 28, 2012 and January 3, 2013. Has everybody had a chance to look those over? Are there any comments, corrections regarding those minutes? If not, do I have a motion and a second to approve?
So moved.
A move by Chief Williamson.
Second.
Second by Executive Director Corson. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Item number two. Oh, and before we get started with the public presentations, one thing, please turn off your cell phones. Also, we now have a two-minute clock. It's much bigger than the Board of Supervisors, so that's for my benefit because I can't see very well.
Are you going to abide by the 2 minutes?
No, it doesn't apply to me.
Oh, good luck with that one.
Yeah.
We'll need a bigger clock.
Yeah. No, it has an electrical wire that leads to me, so it zaps me when I talk. But no, anyway, so please try to stay within your 2 minutes in public presentations. So item number two, public presentations. Is there anybody who would like to come up and present anything? Please state your name and the organization where you're from. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Reverend Wesley Crawford, and I'm actually from SCLC and RISE, is the actual program. Each of you have a packet like this in front of you this morning. Does everybody have that packet? Okay. 2 minutes, here we go, real quick. When I got out of prison, you see, we had the cartoon drawn after me. When I got out of prison, I was happy, I was free, I was ready to do some things. But I met my first wall. I got out, and my first wall was, how are things going to go? Then I met a rocky road, went down a little bit further, went to my mother's house, who was at that point, she was 69 years of age. She was living in public housing. She could not have me in her house. So I moved a little bit further, and I went on to my fiance, who I actually went and married, and I've been with now for 26 years. Went a little further, went down a little bit further, went to education, and met some rocky roads in reference to what a felon can do in reference to education. Because I was a drug felon, I actually went to prison for possession of a controlled substance. When you go to prison for possession of a controlled substance, you're under a thing called a moral turpitude law. And that moral turpitude law actually stays with you like a bad bag of rags all your life. So as you go through obstacles after obstacles after obstacles, we went down to ETR, we went everywhere else, we filled out jobs, we actually filled out 346 applications throughout the city of Bakersfield. All of them coming to question 22, 23, said, have you ever been convicted of a felony or misdemeanor? Once you answer that question, yes, you can forget about ever getting an interview ever again. And especially when they say yes and then be specific on what those felony convictions are. Well, the average person is just not going to do it. So what I choose to do is go back to school. I fought to go back into BC. I got some charge, some laws changed. I went up to Sacramento. I got into BC. I finished BC. I actually left BC, went to Professor Fong's, and became a criminal justice major out at Cal State University Bakersfield. Went through that, and then I had to go to work. Because what happened is, in going to work, you got to do something real quick. So the next thing I did was I left CSUB, signed up for mortuary school, in which you'll see in there, I actually finished. I finished with a 4.6 GPA. Went to Sacramento, passed, got my license, went back, came back, and then Sacramento said, hey, wait a minute, you can't be a funeral director. So now something I have been doing for 7 years, I no longer can do. So the question becomes over and over and over again, what does a felon do? What does he do when he get home? Where does he go? So real quickly, I left all the information in the packet for you. But I want you to turn to the last thing, next to the last. It says, paid in full initiative. I went down to the governor's office. I met with the governor's people. They sent me over to Ledge Council. Ledge Council draws up this. Not that one, not that, John. One more. In. Looks like one, no, that's right.
All right.
This next last step.
Okay, thank you. Last, sorry.
You've met with Ledge. More time.
Met with Ledge Council. Ledge Council came up with RISE. What came up with what you see here. What it is paid in full. What it simply says is, once a man has finished 10 years of his life, and he has gotten, and you see in the front part of your packet, a Department of Rehabilitation certificate from his county that was approved by his district attorney, then he can now get his rights back. That's what that says. I'm here this morning to get CCP to see if they would give us a letter of support for RISE based on the concept. The concept is, after 10 years, after doing many things that you've already done, at some point, at some juncture, you should be able to do that. I worked for a campaign, I worked for Nicole Pyra for 18 months. 18 long months, driving late at night, doing everything. When she got to office, when she achieved office, she told me, I got a job for you. When she achieved office, and now it was time for her to go, she came back to me and she sent the speaker came to see me. The speaker of the house came to see me on the day she opened her house. And you know what he gave me? He gave me a plaque to put on my wall. A plaque doesn't feed your family. I must have a wall full of plaques. I must have all kinds of letters and presentations and everything that you could think of, I actually have from every politician, including the two presidents. It's that fat. It's that thick. The problem is, how do you constitute this? How do you roll this into taking care of your family? Had it not been for my wife, who said, Wesley, I'm going to go to work. I'll go to work, you stay home. You watch the kids, you do the cooking, you do that. Do you mind trading roles? And I said to her, no. Had it not been for my wife, I don't know where I would be today. So God and my wife got me to where I am right now. What I'm asking y'all to do is, you've got to take into consideration those individuals who are like me. I know people who are trying to get their law license. I know people who are trying to get their law, they're trying to pass the Bar Association. I know people who want to be doctors, but all of that prohibits you. The only thing that you can do is walk onto an oil field. And you know what? They will work you from sunup to sundown. And then when you fall, you're done. What about the educated brother? What about the brother and sister who wants to do something? 17 ran a story not long ago about a woman who wanted to be a nurse. She in CDC, she actually went to school, she came home. Couldn't get licensed. She's still sitting in her house 5 years later. Something's wrong with that picture. You have to help us help ourselves. And that's my presentation this morning. If you read through that small packet, I couldn't give you this big packet because you would have got bored. like I got bored. But I'm saying to you, we're due to meet with the governor's office again. We're due to meet with the president's office, and he's going to, you know, do some things to us. So I'm just saying, help us to help ourselves. You know, and you know what the speaker told me? He said, Nicole can't hire you because you're a felon. After 18 months, long, hard months, you can't get hired because you're a felon. I think that's ridiculous. I'm a minister.
Reverend Crawford, excuse me, for interrupting, but you're asking us to for a letter of support
for Project Rebound, for Paid in Full.
Okay.
And if you'll see the end of it, and that's why I said, sometimes you see things behind the scenes. That's Rise. That's Stephanie Campbell. That's us. That's what we've been doing for just getting people through the system.
Okay. And I'm going to turn to County Council. How do we handle this? Is it referred to staff or first?
At this point, you can ask questions for clarifications. You can make a referral to staff, or you can take action to place it on a future agenda
Okay. Yes, Supervisor Perez.
Thank you. What is your timeline, Mr. Crawford?
We're trying to get this on the ballot, and so what we're actually trying to do is through the governor's office. He told us to start here. Go back to your house. Where you live at. Start, see if you can get a letter there, and then come back up here again, and then we'll make sure we walk you through the appropriate offices to get you, and then we'll get you to a senator again that'll be able to sponsor the bill.
So what's your deadline on when you need this letter by?
I'd like to get it as soon as possible if I could, but you know, whatever the time limit, whatever's at the discretion of the body.
Is it a matter we could take action on today, David, or do we need to wait until the next meeting?
No, I think we're going to have to wait until next week. It is not an agendized item, so we cannot take action on it, I believe. Is that correct?
That's correct. So, Mr. Crawford, because it wasn't on today's specific agenda, this body cannot legally take any action and make a decision about it. And so our next meeting, this is a quarterly body. I don't know if there's any mechanism in place that we can provide an answer to Mr. Crawford and not have him wait 3 months to get him his action.
We have in the past called a special meeting for certain items. I guess that could be possible if instead of waiting another quarter.
I'd hate to have you wait 3 months.
Supervisor Perez, to the body, let me just say something else. I actually asked for this to be an action item on the agenda today. I got it in a time limit. I got everything. I did everything that I was supposed to do. And then I got a letter back from this body stating that it would be on public presentations. But I was under the impression that if I wrote the letter, if I went through the process, that it would be an actual agenda item for an action item. That's what I actually asked for, if you read the letter that I sent. And so then I was told it was going to be a presentation before public presentation. And my point is, I'm confused as to the process now. Because if I send something to the Board of Supervisors and I say something, it's actually an agenda item, and they actually get the vote on it. I don't know. I'm trying to find out why this wasn't an agenda item, and what did I do wrong?
Yes, please, if you can.
Okay. The way it works is, if it's not something that's in the regular course of this committee, of this body, for instance, we do not normally or in the ordinary course of business provide letters of support. So then it's up to the chief to decide whether or not it goes on to the committee's agenda. And at this point, because they do not regularly provide letters of support, they decided to have an open session. So at that point.
Yeah, and I did not want to make that decision myself, because it is not something we normally do, is provide letters of support. However, I would be willing to listen to the committee if they would like to hear this as an agendized item. For that, because it is not a normal practice for us.
Mr. Kuge?
Yes.
As it relates to Supervisor Perez's interest in seeing whether or not consideration might be expedited, is there a mechanism by which Mr. Reverend Crawford's request could be referred to staff, and subject to their approval, the board could sort of prospectively authorize you to sign a letter of support?
I don't Well, I don't think we could take any kind of action today at all unless we put it on the agenda.
That would be taking an action. Yeah. What you could do is if you made the action to place it on a future agenda, you can actually make the referral to staff to look into it if that's what you so choose. And then you can place it on a special agenda, have a special meeting on a special agenda sooner than your next regularly scheduled meeting and discuss it then and make a decision at that time.
And that would probably be our quickest route to do that. So if it is the will of the body to have a special meeting to hear this specific agenda item, we can do that. But I didn't want to make that decision on my own without hearing from my colleagues.
Alternatively, individual members could write letters of support, not as part of the CCP, but as the probation chief or the public defender.
Correct. But that doesn't represent the CCP
right.
itself.
Correct.
So, Mr. Crawford, if we do not have a special meeting, which may or may not occur, if it's only one item, it may not happen. You can understand that.
Yes, ma'am.
Then it may have to wait until being placed as an actual agenda item for the next meeting.
How do I get that done?
Well, I think I would like to hear comment from the committee. I mean, the commission, if you would like to hear it on an agenda item, I'd be more than willing to place it on the next agenda. But I did not want to make that decision without input from members of this committee. So, how do we go about that? Do we vote on it?
Someone would need to make a motion to
put it on the next agenda. Okay. Then I would need a motion to agendize Reverend Crawford's request for the next meeting.
So moved.
We have a motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Public Defender Moore.
Public discussion.
Is there anybody in the public that wishes to make a comment on this? No? Any comments from any of the committee members? Yes.
I was curious, having just briefly glanced through the initiative, what the letter that dated 2009, that's 3 years ago, what movement has there been in the last 3 years, if any, on this?
Well, we've done, District Attorney, Ms. Green, is we've met with Ledge Council again. We did go over to the Attorney General's office. It's set in the Attorney General's office for close to 13 months, and because there was an opinion that the Attorney General had to render back. What they were searching was, they were trying to search out the constitutional issues, were they actually informed. They did that, and they sent it back to Ledge Council. We're now at the process of now we're getting ready to get someone to sponsor the bill. We had a senator in 2009 who was ready to run with it. But what happened is that senator didn't make it in the election. And so all his bills died. So now we have to find another senator and another assembly person to do that. In the meantime, what we were told to do was to go back before boards like this and then see if we could get letters of support. And then that way, when we walk into the senator's office, when we walk into the sponsoring senator who is sponsoring the bill, we would actually have a law. So for 3 years, we've been hitting the payments and doing what we needed to do. Did that answer your question?
I have another question.
Yes.
Ms. Elder. Reverend Crawford, are there other counties, other individuals throughout the state that are also behind this, supporting? Do we know that?
Yes, ma'am. What we did was, we have a board called Southern Christian Leadership Conference, which is made up of, in California, we actually have, I think it's 10 different locations, from Riverside all the way. So while I'm here, those ministers and those presidents are actually in front of boards and going before their people. Our intent is that if everybody do what they're supposed to do, then we see sometime in March or April, we would have all of the letters that we need to have throughout the state of California. And then what we're doing is we're springboarding those letters into the governor's office, and we actually have a Ledge aide that's working with us. So what our intent is to do two things. One is, if we can't find a senator to sponsor a bill, we want to try to get the governor to write a bill or to come up with some type of legislation in reference to this body. And at this point, this governor is real open to this, because one of the things he said is there has to be light at the end of the tunnel. And so, yes, while we're here, somebody's in Riverside, somebody's in San Francisco, somebody's in, we have a body in Fresno, we have SCLCs all throughout the state of California. It is the only organization that Martin Luther King himself started. I am the president of the Kern County chapter, and the other presidents as well. Yes, sir.
Mr. Crawford, has the language in the initiative changed, or is it the same? Has it been amended by anybody, or
it has not been amended.
Freshened up in the last 2 or 3 years? No,
it has not been amended, and it's actually, when we thought that it would be by the Attorney General's office, we thought when we sent it over there that they would change some language in it. They did not.
Okay.
They actually said that, you know, in their opinion, we're still trying to get them to write their opinion, but we're trying to get them to physically write an opinion in reference to what is constitutionally and what is not constitutionally. And so the language has not changed.
Thank you.
And let me just tell you this here. It is not for violent felons. Let me say that again. It is not for any form of violence. If you've been convicted of a any violence whatsoever, if you read it, you'll see that you don't qualify for this. So we're only talking about the person who made a mistake, person who, you know, just screwed up his life, you know, just did some things. We're talking about those individuals. And if you would, I told Ms. Jamison yesterday, our point person is a professor who was at San Francisco State, who got out of prison many years ago, went teaching, has written 5-6 books, and so we're only talking about those individuals. And what we're trying to do is, if another person works for a person's campaign, I'm going to use that for an example while Ms. Perez is here. If another person works for that person, we want to give that candidate the freedom to hire that person, to empower him so he can empower his family and go back and empower the community.
Reverend Crawford, this is Chief Cougay. You indicated this is not for violent offenders, but what about, there are other categories, sex offenders, the serious offenders,
no,
other
it's actually,
than that.
It's actually written in the legislation.
Okay.
It's actually written that, yes, sir.
I just want to make sure that you understand that any elected official that has someone work for them during the campaign with the intent to hire them because they're working for them might be illegal, if not absolutely unethical.
That's true. I did understand that.
Okay.
And that's what the speaker made me understand. So even though I worked there, it would have been better if I didn't work there, and then she hired me at the end.
Mr. Crawford, not being a legal person, could you expand a little bit when you said that you're waiting, or there was a hope that the Attorney General would decide whether or not it was constitutional or not?
To write an opinion.
To write an opinion.
What happened is when a bill comes out of legislation, mm-hmm, that you want to actually do, in this case, we wanted to actually take this before the voters in the state of California. So what happens is, as you do these initiatives, it has to go to the Attorney General. The Attorney General has to write an opinion. And on the petitions that you hand out in every county, it has to have both opinions on it. And so we're still waiting for the Attorney General to write that opinion.
Do we know why it's taken that long to get an opinion from them? Or are they not willing to give an opinion? Or is there any correspondence? Or
it's the issue. You know, it's an issue. I mean, it's when does a person have a right? See, and it goes into many different issues. You understand what I'm saying? You know, a person that commits a crime, can he use this as a means of to get rid of his strike? It's a gray area, and we've really never touched it. So we're still waiting. Matter of fact, if you look in the packet, you actually have the deputy attorney generals that's working on it. So we tried to give you as much information as we possibly could.
Any other questions or comments from the commission or the board?
David, I'm assuming that staff will do the necessary research to determine where this piece of potential legislation is procedurally and inform this body. of its efficacy or even potential for passage.
So, sorry, making a referral to county council to do the research on.
I was assuming that would be part of the presentation you would bring back, but absolutely, just so these questions can be answered, whether or not this is a reasonable and feasible option before a decision is made regarding a support letter.
And if you could bring that back to the next body.
Yes, do Sheriff we have Youngblood. A motion, a second for?
We do have a motion, agendize. A second, yeah.
We're going to agendize something for a vote that we don't know enough about.
Well, we have a motion and a second. We haven't voted on it yet.
I understand that.
Yeah.
And we have a motion and a second on something that we don't have any of the answers to, and we're going to agendize it for a vote.
I think referral was to staff to come back with a report. At the time, the board can then take whatever actions necessary. You can choose not to take action, but at that point, you should have all the information, or you can ask staff to come back at another day to give you an additional information.
So we'll have to clarify the motion then again, right?
I think it's assumed, but I think you're fine with the motion that you currently
have. The motion that we have, okay.
Can I make one further comment? You know, when we put this board together, we have specific issues and goals in mind, and I'm just wondering about the scope of issues like this and how pertinent they are to a board like this. I love Mr. Crawford's vigor and what he's trying to do, and he's always very passionate about everything he does. But if our board continues to operate in this fashion outside of what I believe is the scope of what we're trying to do, where are we going? What are we doing?
Well, and that
is
I agree with Sheriff Youngblood too, that exactly why I didn't want to agendize this item, because I felt it might be out of our scope of.
This is going to be a political issue that the legislator is going to take up. I'm not willing to be on a panel that votes for something that I may be totally against, and the panel overrules me. My name's attached to that. I think it's so far outside the scope of what this board is supposed to be doing that I really would object to even agendizing or going any further with this.
Okay. Well, I think the motion was to referral to staff to bring back the information to us, not really to agendize it. If that's my understanding.
On the agenda
it
well.
Is on the agenda.
Oh, it is on the agenda. So we have two motions.
Mr. Puget?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to be very mindful and respectful of others, and particularly appreciative of the sentiment that if there was a no vote that was overridden, their names might be attached. I'm wondering whether Mr. Crawford and in turn Mr. Smith, as author of the motion, might consider, rather than seeking a formal approval by the body in total, whether or not it would be sufficient and perhaps more beneficial to have letters individually. I mean, this is something in as far as working to remove the disenfranchising effect of a felony conviction, I think would greatly promote communal efforts to reduce crime in terms of positioning folks who have, as you say, made a mistake, be in a position to improve their employment prospects and thereby open up opportunities to them. I'm wondering whether, for example, coming from the Office of the Public Defender, coming from employers training resources, that might prove more beneficial than sort of a generic letter. And in view of the comments here, and I can further, working with the California Public Defenders Association, take it to our lobbyists, whether in view of that information, you might, Mr. Smith, and I might better serve you individually than others around the table. Would that be agreeable to you?
Yes, it would. And let me explain to you. You're talking about the scope of this, right? Okay. If you read 109, you have to read it. And I know you all have. The 109 is designed to help people not go back to prison. That's what it's done. That's what it's actually for. If you go to JAN's facility, they're training individuals in a field so that they will never repeat again, and that they will also get different things. This bill starts with that. answer because if you have an individual who cannot access mainstream society, you're going to have them right back. And Sheriff, you said since 109, there's been an increase in different crimes. I'm asking you to look deeper than the crime itself. I'm asking you to look at one of the reasons that may be causing the crime. And so what happened is when you have a young man and you have a young woman and they're coming out of prison, they're not looking to go back. Something is happening. It's something is taking place. And so what happened is I'm only talking about one component of that taking place. If they cannot, by no means, become full employed. If they cannot become employed, then you've killed them off from day one. And I'm just gonna say this for me. I came home, went to five places, and every one of them, when I didn't have a conviction, I worked California Care, they came back and said, oh, you didn't answer the question, so they fired me. So what I'm saying is, until we change the actual, or amend it somewhat, change the actual cause or one of the cause, we're going to continue to keep having the same problem.
Well, I agree with Public Defender Moore. I think this is not for this body to decide, and we still have a motion on the table, but individual...
Mr. Kuge, I was wondering whether, in view of Reverend Crawford's remarks,
You're right.
Yes.
I would yield
okay.
to that.
Whether or not we might seek to unwind the motion in favor of pursuing the individual representative.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to. It just tried to.
Who seconded the motion?
It was.
You may withdraw your second.
In view of Reverend Crawford's expressed preference, I would withdraw my second.
Okay. Sheriff Youngblood, did you have another
one? I just want to say there's a philosophical difference in what we all do for a living. With all due respect to Conrad and Mr. Crawford, they both use the term when someone makes a mistake. When you go into my house and steal my stuff, that's not a mistake. That's an intentional act. So there's a philosophical difference that when you paint your picture by using that word when someone makes a mistake, I have really a strong disagreement with that.
What I'm basically saying is this. I'm saying...
I heard what you said.
I think I'm going to put a stop to this discussion, but Director Smith?
Well, one of my objectives in making the motion was to get council and staff to give us feedback so we have a better understanding of what's going on. In the execution of our mission, to keep these people from going back and finding jobs, from my perspective, knowing what has created the barriers to keep them from getting jobs is important to me. When I was an employer and my salespeople had to be licensed through DMV, over the years I had two different individuals who received a license who were convicted felons. But they went through the licensing process. One ended up being a very good individual for our organization. The other one went back to the dark side. And that posed a problem for him, not for me, because it wasn't something that was our end of it. But what I'm hearing now is that there are barriers that keeps people from getting jobs. But it sounds like most of those barriers are created by the government, that employers have a choice whether to hire a felon or not, or ex-felon or not. Whereas it's the government, county agencies or state agencies, that have this adamant feeling that we're not going to accept you back in regardless of what we had to go through. And from my perspective, to get people prepared to go out there, I need to understand the scope of that. And I think staff and council would be better at giving me that information than me starting a research project to try to sort that out.
Well, we have a withdrawn second on your original motion to agendize it, but do you want to modify your motion to maybe refer it to staff to bring back more information to us? Or just drop the motion. I'm not sure what you're saying.
Well, I would modify it if we cannot get a second on the initial, which was to get that information out. That initial motion was not to call for a vote, but to collect information so we'd have enough information to make some type of decision.
Does that require a motion in as far as it seeks?
I don't think so. I think it's just a referral to staff for information.
If you want staff to bring that back on an agenda, I think what council is telling you is you need a referral to place it back on the agenda for a report back. If you just want council and staff to do work and share it, you can do that as well, but it won't be talked about at the next meeting, public presentation.
So.
I don't withdraw my motion. Either it will die because it's not a second.
Okay, so the motion stands. You've withdrawn your second, is that correct?
In view of Reverend Crawford's remarks.
Okay. And is there another second? Okay, the motion dies of a lack of a second. Thank you, Reverend Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. God bless you.
Okay, any other public presentations? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, we do have Stanford. I apologize, Mr. LaRue. We have a conference call. You'll get your chance. I forgot about it. We have a conference call with Stanford. And so if we can get them on the line, that would be... This would be item number 5 on our agenda. A conference call with Dr. Robert Weisberg with Stanford Law School.
Hello?
Yes, this is David Cougay. I'm the Chief Probation Officer and Chairman of the Community Corrections Partnership for Kern County Probation, CCP, and we are on this conference call to hear from the Stanford Law School regarding Kern County's participation in the Stanford Criminal Justice Center study on California's public safety realignment. And could we have your name?
Good morning. I'll go first. This is Bob Weisberg. I'm a professor of law here at Stanford and the faculty co-director of our Criminal Justice Center. And I'll introduce my three colleagues here.
Hi, this is Lisa Kwan. I'm the research assistant at the Stanford Criminal Justice Center.
Hi, I'm Mark Feldman. I'm a researcher at the Stanford Criminal Justice Center.
And Corinne Keel, I'm also a researcher with the Stanford Criminal Justice Center.
Okay, thank you very much, and I apologize for being a little bit late, but our...
No, that's just fine.
Yeah.
No problem.
Okay, so I will give the floor to you to make your presentation.
This is Bob Weisberg again. I will give a very, very brief overview, and then we invite your questions on specific issues. We at Stanford are working under several grants we have received to undertake a major study of the background, the implementation, and the possible future effects of AB 109 and realignment. We're doing it on a number of fronts, and let me summarize them. First, we have done a sorting of data of the 58 counties to establish a kind of context for studying the actual effects of realignment. So we have amassed a great deal of data about the current structure of criminal justice agencies in those counties, various demographic factors, crime rate factors, rates of contribution to the state prison system before realignment, and so on and so on, and also availability and use of ancillary social services. So this enables us to then judge what kinds of background factors in the counties might help explain the data we will ultimately develop or are developing about how various criminal justice decisions have been changed by realignment. Second, we're doing statistical analyses of what's actually happening on the ground in these counties. And I should emphasize that one of the great challenges here, which you folks yourselves may have observed, is the difficulty of collecting data from within counties and also the lack of sharing of data among counties and with the state. But the gist of it is we want to see, for example, relative rates of convictions to triple non-crimes versus prison-worthy crimes, uses of the new split sentencing phenomenon, various pretrial decisions, you know, such as whether alternatives to regular incarceration are being used, decisions by sheriffs whether or not to release prisoners from jails who might otherwise be jailable. And one of the frontier issues, of course, and emerging quite significantly, is the PRCS phenomenon and the way supervision and being and revocations are being handled in the counties. So we're trying, and with and this is quite a challenge, to establish data on actual statistical changes. Next, we're doing extremely extensive and intensive interviews and field studies with various counties to learn from the officials in those counties how their decision making may have been altered by AB 109. So, for example, we're going to be conducting a survey instrument with judges in the various counties to get a sense of whether certain certain sentencing decisions, which lie in their discretion, might have been affected by realignment. For example, where we have high-end triple non-crimes, where judges have some power under triads or other sentencing rules to either shorten or lengthen a particular sentence, to use a split sentence or a straight sentence, to what extent are judges changing their sentencing recommendations in light of the concern that lots of convicts who would previously have been in the state prisons are now going to be in county jails. Similarly, with prosecutors, we're trying to learn, and we're going to do this both through data and through extensive interviews. We've done a fair number of interviews in other counties, and we can explain that. We're trying to find out whether charging decisions, as for example, between the felony and misdemeanor side of wobblers, between now prisonable or now jailable felonies, how concerns about the financial and other consequences of AB 109 might be influencing charging decisions. So that's a rough picture. We have so far begun collecting the contextual and the statistical data I've described. Our researchers have conducted, 80 plus interviews, very, very extensive phone or in-person interviews with officials from a few select counties. And over the next 6 months to a year, we're hoping to flesh out the overall picture. Our goal is utterly nonpartisan. We're trying to serve the public interest by informing the agencies of the state and the public about how realignment is working. You know, our clients, if I may use the term loosely, will be the governor and the CDCR, but also all the counties with whom we have communication. I'll ask my colleagues if, in that admittedly rushed picture, I've left out anything very important.
That's pretty good.
Yep. Hearing no dissent, I will turn things back to you both from Kurt.
I had a question, Dr. Weisberg. In Kern County, one of the main things that we're focused on is the fact that our allocation of state money per offender, we're at the very bottom of the totem pole. Part of your research, will the amount of money per offender or the amount of money allocated be taken into consideration if you're comparing a county who has four times as much money per offender and compare the services they're able to provide versus ours? We want to make sure that that's somehow considered.
Absolutely. We think that's crucial, and it's interesting that although, of course, money is always an issue and every agency understandably wants more money, there are significant concerns about allocation. There are two levels, and we're examining both of them. At one level, it's the rough allocation between state and county, which is probably what you're referring to. One of the interesting things is that in the original allocations under AB 109, the allocation was proportionate, roughly, to the previous AB 109 contributions, if I may use that term, of counties to prisons. to the state prison system. And some research that we've done shows that that's an interesting number. It doesn't necessarily reflect the crime rate. It doesn't necessarily reflect, or it could be distorted by lots of things happening in the county, and it's not necessarily the fairest or best system. There have been some changes in that formula, but we're tracking them. We're also learning that there are huge variations among counties in terms of how the money is allocated within the county. Obviously, a well-run CCP will, you know, be a good medium for ensuring that there's a fair allocation, but we've seen great variations among the counties. Just one thing we've learned anecdotally, but we're trying to track down, is that municipal police chiefs who are frequently not parts of CCPs are feeling they're not getting any of the money, even though they bear a lot of the burden. But absolutely, the funding is crucial, and the allocation issues are really the decisive ones.
Yes.
Professor Weisberg, this is Conrad Moore. Let me ask you, in terms of taxpayer cost, do you believe or do you identify any financial or economic costs that might be visited either on this board or the county more generally by virtue of involvement? And I mean that to encompass work and time that might be expended having to gather statistics or numbers that might not otherwise be gathered, and stated differently. Is there any economic incentive that you might offer to us by way of subsidizing or otherwise funding associated costs to incentivize our participation?
Well, I can only answer that indirectly. The research community certainly would not be able to offer direct funding, although research entities like ours and others can do some of the research for a particular county. A concern we have, though, and this is something we may well press on the state, is that the funding for AB 109 has generally not included funding for evaluation. My guess is that as we develop data, which we will be showing the state and some counties, we might have some indirect effect in inducing more long-term resources to ensure that there is evaluation. But I can only say I sympathize with the concern, and we'd be glad to talk to you about it, but there's no obvious, you know, financial subsidy available for that. At least in terms of a direct subsidy to the counties, as opposed to outside researchers helping do some research. I have one of my colleagues, Corinne, wants to comment on that.
And I'll just add, as far as any cost, I don't think that it's the case that for any of these studies or segments of the larger study that we'd be asking for additional data to be collected. We're trying to find out what counties are collecting, but definitely there are other mechanisms that we're using to gather that information, not using your time. The one time commitment, I suppose, would be to have sort of one person from the representing offices, whether it was the representative from the executive committee on the CCP or their designee for the qualitative aspect of the study. However, that would be about an hour of each actor's time and spread amongst those offices, maybe a total of 5 or 6 hours of time from county employees. So, I mean, in that, I think that's relatively minimum, but just to let you know that that's the time that we'd be asking for as far as work time.
Professor Weinberg, this is John Nile. I'm the County Administrative Officer, and this is following up on one of the questions that was previously asked. As was discussed, Kern County has the lowest per offender allocation, yet we have 82% more of the individual sent back to our county. Your study looks to be something that would be historical in nature. I would like something to be predictive in nature as well, because some would argue this is a train wreck waiting to happen. The lowest funding and the most of the individuals back to our community, what is the outcome going to be for Kern County if the allocation methodology isn't changed to really adapt to our circumstances?
That is a very vital question, and although I spoke about the historical origins, I by no means meant that we would limit our study to that. I think you've identified a very frontier issue. The predictive stuff is really, really complicated, as of course you know, because first we'd have to settle, so to speak, what the current funding is, just so we have those parameters in the what I'll loosely call the equation. but then making projections both about rates of offending, rates of charging, and most dramatically perhaps, rates of revocation and violation and supervisory costs is very, very daunting. But we think this is a really important issue. It's one of the more challenging ones, but it's certainly something we're going to be following up on. We think the data we'll be generating in terms of the various changes in practices and patterns in the counties will be the data from which we can, on which we could at least try to base some of these predictions. And of course, coordinating the criminal justice data with what we learn about the funding, I think, may be a very good approach. But so we hear you very strongly, and we'd like to be helpful on that score.
Dr. Weisberg, this is Lily Alvarez. I have a couple of questions to ask. Number one, what other counties are being considered to be part of this study? And number two, what is the time frame for this study?
Well, first of all 58 counties, in a sense, are part of our study. Because, and the data we gather, for example, on county context is all 58 counties. We're proceeding cautiously in terms of deeper case studies. So there are eight or so counties which are our first cut. Can you folks remind me?
Yeah, Sacramento, Santa Clara, Alameda, San Francisco, Riverside, Orange, Los Angeles, Solano,
Fresno,
San Joaquin, and Santa Barbara County.
So, that was, a sampling of relatively populous counties, though obviously not all the populous counties, and it didn't reflect any great sense of, priority in terms of importance. And you'll notice what's missing there, the elephant in the room or in the state of Los Angeles, which is a big challenge we can talk about later. I can only say that we would be delighted to treat as part of our more intensive analysis, our case study analysis, any county like yours, which is interested in our help, with the understanding that, as Corinne mentioned, in a sense, what we'd be asking of you is just a friendly partnership, that not that you'd be doing work that you don't have time to do. We'd be asking for access to data that you may have that we don't already have, which we'd be able to use, under certain confidentiality arrangements, but also something that's very helpful to us is what Corinne mentioned, which we hope is pretty cheap to you, and that is on the qualitative side, the chance to interview, people like yourselves or, representative officials from your various constituent agencies. And we think this qualitative approach is very useful in helping us analyze the quantitative stuff we have. But consider this an open invitation for a partnership if you find it in your interest.
And then the time frame?
Oh, the time frame. There are several moving parts to this, but roughly speaking, I'll say a year. There are certain parts of our research that have already been done, at least in other counties, and some of the general statewide stuff. The judges study we're doing is probably going to be over the next 6 months. A parallel interview study we hope to do with prosecutors is probably about a 9-month matter. But all the other things, including, for example, these financing questions, I'll roughly say is on anywhere from a 6 to 18 month basis. That's basically sort of the extent of our grant period. And we also think, as we move into the second year of realignment, and as we get basically years two and a half, beginning of year three, we'd be getting the point at which the data start to become meaningful. And it's more feasible to make projections about the long-term picture of realignment.
One other question, because the County Administrative Officer Realignment Allocation Committee is going to take up the allocation of resources in the next 18 months, is there going to be preliminary information available to them so that they can make some decisions based on experience rather than on just guesses?
I can't answer that question very specifically. We were not planning to publish anything in the next few weeks on this subject. However, I'd be glad to communicate with you offline to see what data from what we already have could be provided to you in terms of what we've learned about allocation formulas to see if we can be helpful. So I'd be happy to pursue that offline.
Thank you.
Yes.
May I ask a question? I'm involved in this research.
Sure, yes.
Good morning, Dr. Mary Sawyer, and I'm working on this research with Professor Sarah. And one of the things that I wanted to ask is getting the formats for the interviews and the questions for the data that you're trying to collect is important, and that's one of the things that we'd like to see here in Kern County. I've had some difficulty getting a return back on that. And what we'd also like to do, and I pose this to the committee, if they become involved in working with you on these interviews and the research, we'd like to be able to get that data compiled in a format here so that Mr. Nyland, that your department would be able to use that, because we see that to be very time sensitive. So I'm happy to give my contact information. In fact, Sarah has it, and if you could get back to me any of the questionnaire formats that you have, I'm willing on my own as a member of the community to try and work with our analysts here to see what we can do to come up with that, if that's appropriate to this committee. Thank you.
Yeah. Let me see if I understand your question correctly. The interviews we've been doing have not required as a predicate that the county produce data for us. That's something that's going on in various counties as a kind of parallel matter. They really are qualitative interviews, just asking officials to reflect on their experiences and their concerns and perhaps their predictions about the effects of AB 109. I think it may be possible for us to send you an outline of the types of questions we've been asking. It's also possible, I don't want to promise this because I'm not sure what our internal rules would be here, but it's possible we could give you some redacted samples of what we've heard from some other counties, just so you get a sense of the flavor of what we're getting. Again, the predicate for this is not that you provide data with us ahead of these interviews. We think the interviews are worth doing on our own. We then give you feedback on what we learned from various interviews. But aside from its value to us in terms of a statewide study, we think the value is when we learn something qualitatively about what's going on in your county, we can, a little later in the process, use that to help answer data questions that turn out to be salient. You know, so for example, if prosecutors in the county surmised that they might be under pressure to charge one way rather than the other because of certain crime rate changes related to AB 109, we would then feed back with to you later data addressing that particular question. Same thing with sheriffs, for example.
Yes, and my question directly posed is that we would want to have back to us all the compilation of data that you gleaned out of Kern County. And that's simply my point. Chief Kuge, my involvement with Stanford came out of that November 2nd meeting in Sacramento. Thank you very much.
Yes, I can't imagine any problem sharing the information back with the county. If anything, you know, the concern is sometimes that the county doesn't want the information shared with outsiders. But between us and the county, I would think it's totally open.
Okay. I have a question. Professor Weissman, please agree.
Yes.
Have any counties refused or told you they weren't going to participate in your study? You named the ones that you approached, those 11, but are there any that have said no?
I would say none has said flatly no. There are degrees of responsiveness and caution. In some cases, perhaps it's bureaucratic inertia. In some cases, it's just general caution. And, you know, we've been going back to counties to try to persuade them to open things up. LA, as I mentioned, has been a challenge, but that is beginning to open up to us as well. Part of the problem with LA is, of course, you can view it as a county, or you can almost view it as a kind of sub-state made up of other things. But no, we have not been categorically refused by any county, as far as I know.
Is Fresno County participating then?
Yes. In fact, we've had some wonderful interviews with some of the officials in Fresno County. They're a great example of the helpfulness of the interviews, and we'll be following up with them, yes, but they've been very cooperative with us.
What would be the point of having Fresno and Kern as part of the study, since they're both Central Valley counties, similar crime rates, similar unemployment levels, a lot of similarities? What would be your point in having two Central Valley counties involved in this study?
Well, first, we want to get all the counties. If anything, the ones that are relatively less important for a study are the northern ones, which have extremely few people in them and not great criminal justice challenges. I think, under further analysis, however similar Kern and Fresno are, there will be differences. But we also want to be helpful to particular counties, so it would be selfish of us to say, well, we wouldn't study your county because we actually think there's another county so similar that we wouldn't learn anything new from yours. We'd like to help your county, if you will. But the main thing is that I think at the level of detail we hope to delve into, even arguably similar counties will turn out to be different in interesting ways.
Supervisor Perez.
Thank you. Leticia Perez from the Board of Supervisors. Professor, thank you so much for your time and interest. As you can imagine, we do have some concerns with the manner in which Kern County might be portrayed, given that we are 58 out of 58 counties in terms of funding. Part of the challenge in the allocation process was that we did not have a strong lobby involved in the determination of the calculation. And so I would be concerned that Kern County may be portrayed negatively or poorly, and it would not be directly linked to the lack of funding or the general neglect the state of California has engaged our county with.
Well, I can only say that we would not publicize things about your county that we didn't have permission from you to publicize. And we think that if it turned out that there are outcomes in your county which are worrisome, which can be traced to inequitable funding, that would actually portray Kern in a very sympathetic light. That's certainly the sort of thing we're concerned about. I mean, at a very abstract level, I won't name any particular places right now. We are concerned about what might be called some perverse incentives, whereby, and this gets back to the historical point, counties that had been pretty profligate in sending people to state prison, in other words, that had been doing very heavy charging, very heavy sentencing, and then offloading all the costs onto the state, by some versions of this formula, then get the benefit of that, and that's really not fair. So we're trying to figure out, and this gets back to the prediction question, where the incremental changes will be caused by realignment. So for example, if after we analyze all these factors, certain counties are likely to bear very, very heavy burdens of PCRS supervision, certain probation departments will be experiencing a very drastic shift between their older caseload and their newer caseload and so on and so on. We think documenting this would actually sympathetically illuminate the plight of the counties. But I do want to emphasize, though, that we would not publicize anything by county name without your agreement.
Do you mean the agreement of the CCP?
Well, I say the county, if the CCP is the relevant representative of the county, I guess, yes. But I mean, it all depends on from whom we're getting information. We always abide by any concerns that any individual or agency information source would, impose on us.
And ultimately, this is Chief Gugay, that it would come from the county because anything that we do would have to be approved by the Board of Supervisors anyway.
Fair enough. And we would have to talk about who is the ultimate partner, if you will, in a technical sense, as between the CCP particular agencies and the county supervisors. And I'm unable to sort of answer that question in the abstract, but we would discuss it with you for sure.
And Dr. Weinberg, this is John Nyland again. I hate to keep talking about the financial stuff. However, is there any chance to take a look back to the 1991 realignment and the poor allocation of resources to counties, which contributed over a long period of time to the poor ability to fund the types of programs that other counties who have had a greater share of realignment money were had the luxury to do so?
That's a great historical question we have not examined. I would take you up on it and again be delighted to talk to you offline to get some information about the 1991 event. I just think that would be a fabulous research opportunity, and we could put somebody on that at no cost to you except, you being a source of some information and wisdom about it, and then we could see what we could do.
Excellent. Thank you.
Corinne.
Oh, just an additional point on that. Without looking specifically at the 1991 allocation of funds, we have noticed and talked to representatives in these qualitative interviews about some of the funding holes that they had prior to realignment, and have definitely been taking that into consideration and analysis because, sort of as you've alluded to before, some counties were on a much stronger financial footing in the criminal justice system prior to realignment, and that has impacted, we think, maybe some of the outcomes there. So that is something that we're sensitive to and looking at, even in the qualitative study, the how well-resourced the county criminal justice system was to begin with.
And I would also add, I'm Mark Feldman, I've been interviewing sheriffs, and there has been a huge range as to what sheriffs what counties have been able to do, as Corinne said, because of where they were at prior to realignment and because of the funding they received through AB 109. And so as part of being, if you're a part of this study, I'm both looking at like the successes that you've been able to implement in your jail management strategy since realignment, but also the struggles that you've encountered because of funding constraints. And I'm not at all portraying them as a failure on the part of the county. It's more just you're given a certain situation.
If anything, one of the interesting developments in what's happened in the academic world and empirical studies of criminal justice has been to take the stuff that people see as fixed events and learn that they're actually the effects of earlier decisions and that a lot of things represent, what economists will call, cost externalization, where, a particular agency may have a not so wonderful looking outcome pattern, but it turns out that it can be traced to a combination of having a lot of unfair burden put on it and yet the cost being imposed on that agency when it could have been imposed on the group or the party, whatever that was intending to the people to them and all that. So let's just say that's a fascinating example of exactly what we're trying to figure out here.
Mr. Coogan?
Yes.
Professor Weisberg, one of your colleagues participated in a study throughout the state on pension systems, and it was entitled More Pension Math, and it portrayed Kern County in a very poor light. How would you respond to the concern that there may be an inherent personal bias in working through such a study to portray some counties as successes and others as perhaps at the other end? And what assurance, if any, might you provide to those of us who, having experienced Kern County being portrayed in a negative light in a recent Stanford study, might not suffer the same outcome this go round if we were to consent to participation?
Well, I'm sensitive to your concerns. I don't know about this pension system study. It may have been done by one of the economics programs. Again, I'd be glad to talk to you offline about to kind of diagnose what might have gone wrong in terms of understandings of what was going to happen in that study and would do everything possible to avoid it. So I don't know what possible biases, could explain that. I can only say, I don't think we start out with any biases, and the farthest thing from our mind right now is to rank counties in terms of how well or how poorly they're doing in terms of kind of a normative analysis of good counties and bad counties. We're trying to get objective information. We're trying to find out where the changes are happening and what they can be traced to. And in our internal write-ups, which have been quite detailed so far, of what we've learned from various counties, especially through these extensive interviews. We've gleaned themes, we've gleaned concerns, we've compiled some statistics, but we've been doing a lot of run-throughs recently of our some of our preliminary findings, in part because we're going to be presenting them to some state officials. And I don't think I've heard a word from anybody, any of our researchers, saying, ah, this county doesn't know what it's doing, or this county is wonderful. That kind of normative evaluation is simply not part of it.
Mr. Kugi,
want to emphasize, I'm sorry if this other study is a Stanford study, but Stanford is not a monolith, and we are our own research shop.
Given that we have another agenda item with a similar request, my recommendation is we thank Stanford for their interest in including us in, and that I move that we refer this to the executive committee for further discussion and decision, and we will reply to them as quickly as possible.
Thank you very much. We are flattered by the opportunity to talk to you, and we'd be happy to follow up along any of the lines we've discussed.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Weisberg.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think they wanted to stay on the line to listen to
Dr. Oh, did they? Okay.
You ask them.
Did you want to stay on the line to listen to the other presentation?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Particular timeline they're working on that they'd like an answer that I didn't know?
No, that I don't know. This is the first, first I've heard of it is with everybody else, so I don't know what timeline. I'm not sure what they're looking at this point. But we do have a motion on the floor, I do believe, to move this to the executive committee for discussion. Do we have a second on that motion? Or can we?
At this point, you can't take any official action.
It was for discussion.
I don't know if that's a real action. You're asking for more discussion.
Okay.
But
I withdraw my motion. Okay. All right. Well, that's yes. Director Alvarez.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that District Attorney Lisa Green brought this issue to us back in November or October. She had received a letter asking about participation. I want to thank Rebecca Jameson for organizing this presentation so that we could all hear, because I think it was Ms. Green's desire for all of us to hear the same information at the same time to make a collective decision. So I just want to thank you for putting that together.
We would have to agendize this item in order to take action, is that correct? Madam Counsel?
I was just looking at the executive session. It's actually on Monday, on the executive committee.
So we would be discussing this anyway?
Yes.
Okay.
It's already
agendized. Okay. So we don't need a motion. We'll be talking about it again anyway. And again, I'm going to go out of order of our agenda. I believe Dr. Zhu from Cal State Bakersfield has to leave, and so I would call item number 7 up. For Dr. Zhu to make his presentation.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jacob Zhu. I'm currently serving as the Department Chair of Criminal Justice at Cal State University Bakersfield. First of all, I'd like to thank you all for giving us this opportunity to share with you our research plan. Today I came with my three colleagues, two of them Professor Robert Fong and Steve Ellenberg. They have just left because they have a class. And one professor, Anthony Flores, still with me. Our specialty areas are the area of law enforcement and war corrections. And we have done a lot of those evaluation studies for county, state, and federal agencies. As you can see in our Vita, in this packet, we attached sketch bio and full Vita. We are here this morning to briefly propose a 3-year evaluation study on AB 109. As we all know, AB 109 has been a huge challenge to all of us. And this challenge requires a new way of doing business, which includes evidence-based crime policy. In an effort to identify and implement evidence-based policies and programs, the goals of our proposed study are twofold. First of all, we will examine the impact of AB 109 on crime and recidivism rate, and on the administration of criminal justice in Kang County. To this end, we are going to use longitudinal statistical techniques, such as time series analysis and event history analysis, which is one of the most advanced statistical techniques for recidivism studies. In our research team, we have a couple of experts who have been using both longitudinal techniques for evaluation studies. Through time series analysis, the changes in crime and recidivism rate before and after the implementation of Realignment Act will be examined. This will allow us to identify the true impact of AB 109 on crime and recidivism rate over time. So we are talking about 3 years of follow-up period. While controlling for important social level variables such as unemployment rate, poverty, and population density. With the use of event history analysis as a second longitudinal statistical techniques, we can systematically examine the impact of Realignment Act on recidivism rate, especially in terms of both probability and timing of recidivism, and recidivism across different types of crime, offenders, and programs, while also controlling for important social level variables. In addition, we will examine the impact of AB 109 on the administration of criminal justice here in Kang County, especially in terms of the caseload or workload of the probation department, the sheriff office, the office of public defender, and district attorney. You can also take into account some of the variables we have talked so far, some pre-made allocation, all of other variables we are going to put into our model. Our second goal of this study is to examine the effectiveness of programs and policies employed by probation department, the sheriff office, and other agencies of CCP in Kang County. First, we will look at a program-specific recidivism rate to determine which programs are most effective and which programs are ineffective and which programs need to be revised. Event history analysis again will be used to meet this goal. Next, we will evaluate Kang County's programs on both content and implementation. This evaluation will examine how well Kang County specific programs adhere to evidence-based practices and implement the empirically identified principle of effective intervention. Result of this evaluation can be very useful for future decision regarding the program design, implementation, and improvement and funding. This proposed project, I think, it can be justified on the following grounds. First, no systematic evaluation studies have done on AB 109 here in Kang County. As you can see in my third handout in your packet, this is my handout. Regarding Association for Criminal Justice Research in California Conference, many other states have already begun their own county-specific evaluation studies on AB 109. For example, Marin County, San Francisco County, Fresno County, in collaboration with CSU Fresno, San Joaquin County, Butte County, in collaboration with CSU Chico, have already presented their preliminary findings on evaluation studies during the October 2012 ACJRC conference. I think they have already begun those empirical studies to be able to use those findings as a means and tools by which they can ask more resources from Sacramento. We also know that Kang County is selected, as we just had teleconference, is selected as one of the 11 counties for Stanford AB 109 evaluation studies. But as you have heard, their focus and approach will be somewhat different from ours. Their findings will be also limited in application to Kang County because of local context contextual factors such as demographics and difference in resources, or because of the differences in implementation. Secondly, the proposed research will go beyond existing AB-109 evaluative studies in terms of the depth and width of the study and research design and methodology. As you probably have read some of the previous studies, and most of them has been largely descriptive in the analysis. For ours, by employing the time series analysis, our study will systematically examine the differences in crime and recidivism rate before and after the implementation of Realignment Act, while also controlling for important social level variables. Event history analysis also enable us to examine whether or not an individual was arrested during a certain follow-up period, and also in how many days after release offenders were rearrested, with some attention to the factors related to the probability and timing of the recidivism. Event history analysis does provide a different way of viewing recidivism and allow for a comparison among various types of crime, offenders, and programs. The evaluation studies specifically designed for Kirk County can be used to guide administrative effort in determining which programs should be continued, eliminated, or revised to help save the country money. Thirdly, considering the differences in demographics and resources, we have talked a lot about poor allocation of resources here in Kern County. And findings of and the impact of AB-109 will likely vary across the counties. And findings of this proposed study will be useful in making a scientific assessment of the differential impact of AB-109 across counties, and will provide Kern County with an evidence-based foundation to justify more resources from the state government and legislature. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Any questions from the commission?
Who's funding your study?
No, just we are proposing this study to CCP.
To be funded by the CCP?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I have a question for council. One is, depending on the amount, would this have to go out to RFP, and next, before we could even take any action, it'd have to be agendized as an item, correct?
It would have to definitely be agendized. As far as we're going to go out to RFP, I'm not part of the budget.
Okay. It depends on the amount of the, okay.
Do we have a dollar amount?
Oh yeah, I could give you just rough estimate this time. Since this, we proposed 3 years evaluation study. In a year, I think it will be someplace just 140 and 150 in a year. So in total for 3 years, could be 400,000 to 450,000, but could be a little bit flexible.
Any question? Yes, Director Alvarez.
I have a question, thank you. We talk about programs, about evidence-based programs. I was wondering whether or not the scope of your design was only to look at the evidence-based programs practiced by criminal justice, or they would include, for example, the evidence-based programs for ancillary services, such as mental health or substance abuse treatment, and then how you would propose to deal with the confidentiality rules that are very different between those two groups.
I think that's an excellent question. And, we haven't specified all of those details, which institutions will be, agencies will be included for data analysis for our studies. But in general, we plan to include most of those member agencies of CCP because you are collaborating with each other. But there might be some limitation in that extension of our research to all of those members, depending upon the availability of some of the data set and depending on those really legal issues. But that's just one thing we need to discuss with you.
What is your timeline, Doctor?
Actually, just as soon as we get approval from, we plan to begin during this summer break. As you know, summer time is the best for faculties because four of our full-time faculty from the criminal justice department are plan to involve in this project because this will give us a huge opportunity to be able to do some evidence-based research. It will also give us ample opportunity for publications and as well as the actual need to satisfy with the need of the county. So we plan to begin this project as soon as we can.
If this body cannot fund your study, do you have any other sources of being able to pay for this study?
I'm checking with some member agencies of CCP, such as Probation Department and County and some of the agencies, but I'm just presenting this idea to CCP because this one has all of those member agencies.
The amount of money, I think we probably would have to go to RFP on this. And the other is, we're really not sure how much money we're going to have next year, to be honest. There is $77 million, I believe, over at that was underestimated, that is supposed to be spread among counties that were underfunded before. But how much of that Kern County will get, we don't know. So until, and I'm not even sure we will know by the summer as to what our amount would be. So that's going to be very difficult. But the RFP process will be a long process anyway. So yes, Dr. Sorry.
Dr. Mary Sawyer, are you going for a Department of Justice grant currently, Dr. Chu?
Yeah, we are working on a couple of those U.S. Department of Justice projects. One with Bakersfield Police Department, the other with Kern County Sheriff's Office, and we are working on, but nobody knows what they have.
Okay. The Department of Justice grants is huge money, $1.8 billion. This is the time of the season that it's out. The problem in getting those grants is getting this data. So the empirical research is necessary in order for a university to be able to compete and get that money. And it's big money that can be brought back into this community. This is time sensitive. I don't know, when is your grant application due?
Actually, one with Bakersfield Police Department is so that's Anthony Flores is working with Bakersfield Police Department. And the other one with Kern County, we have a couple of those grant proposals we are going to apply. But it is the timeline.
It'll be a year before that comes back up. I read the grant last year. It's big. It's big money. And something that conceivably could be worked out, and this is for you to figure out, is if you agreed to look at advancing these funds to university and they got such a grant, those funds might come back.
David, I have a question.
Yes, Supervisor.
On the probability that we would, even if this board were to be fully in agreement that they wanted to fund this study, would there be, is the timeline in place to be able to make that decision and have the funding to the doctor by the summer?
No, I don't believe so, because I don't think we have that money available for to be paid out. We have some in contingencies, which I believe is what, about $300,000? A little over $200,000, I think, in contingencies. The rest of the money has been already you know, allocated to the different departments to be used. So we don't have that advancement of money.
The timing of this proposed study is flexible, depending upon the situation. But we can prepare this study in terms of literature review and some other things we can do even without having any fund. But official timing could be flexible.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any other comments or questions by the commission? Any from the public? All right. Thank you, Dr. Zhu. All right. Now we will go back. Mr. LaRude, I believe I interrupted you, so I will allow you to go first. So I apologize for that.
2 minutes. Good morning. Bob LaRude with Kern County Parks and Recreation Department. I'm here before you today. As I was talking to Supervisor Perez, talking about how our department has used various programs, i.e. the work release program, community service workers, the CERB program, CalWORKS program. We've used many of those folks in the past. And as was mentioned earlier by Dan, sometimes we're successful with those folks and have actually hired them on the permanent with our department. We had a great working relationship with the Sheriff's Department with the Work Release Program. And I'm here before you today just to let you know that in support, any way that we can work, again, with the Sheriff's Department, with any of these folks, I don't know all the rules and regulations with AB 109, but we've had a great working relationship with them. So if there's a way to funnel some of those folks into the work release, and I talked with Rosemary, I think it was last week or so, that there are some of those folks that I guess are being funneled into that program. But again, we're willing to take on some of those folks. So I'm here basically in support of what the sheriff has been doing and how we've worked with them, as well as some of the other programs.
Thank you. Yes, Supervisor.
Chief Cougay, Bob and I met in the beginning of my tenure as supervisor, I guess it was just a few weeks ago. We met in discussing the programs he offers, a way in which his department manages our parks and other recreational facilities. And I posed a very simple question, what is your greatest need? And it was very apparent that cleaning their bathrooms and keeping the beautification component of parks is a serious challenge, one because of funding issues, and the effects that that has in our public parks is pretty profound, insofar as Bob indicated, bathrooms could be cleaned in the morning and by the afternoon they're pretty dirty. They do not have the resources to go in and clean them. That is a tendency to keep families away from parks, thereby increasing crime that occurs in public places, et cetera, it all seems to be very connected. And so we surmised that working very closely with Donnie Youngblood, which apparently he has a relationship with already, to maybe funnel some of our AB 109 guys through, potentially with some kind of certification program with Dan, our new director of ETR, as an incentive to get some folks some irrigation training, some kind of certification that could lead people towards more gainful employment. And so it would be a great way to meet the need of that Bob has in Parks and Rec and cleaning, making their facilities beautiful and welcoming to families that thereby discourages crime and makes our public places more legitimate places of recreation. And so this just seems to me like a natural fit. We have a lot of folks I know that we cannot keep in custody, and perhaps we could incentivize it through a certification process of irrigation, landscaping, something to motivate them to stay in it, maybe earn some credits, but to also help out Bob and the tough job he has.
Yeah, and that, I guess, Dan, that would be up to you to see if there's something you could do for the certification, and I'm sure the sheriff would be, I mean, they've worked well with Bob, and so have we, actually, you know, in District 1. Sorry, it's not your district, but we use crews out of Camper Winolan to clean parks up in the Kernville area, to go out and do, as you say, cleaning the bathrooms.
Right.
And so we've done some of that also. But yeah, I fully support, you know, he has a very small department, it's been cut, and if he needs workers, I mean, we would be more, I would be more than willing to help out. I'm sure the sheriff will do. But I think it's a good idea to have, maybe if there's some incentive for them to do that, it would be much, you know, a greater, you know, to show up do a much better job if there was some kind of certification of some sort. But I don't know if that's possible, Dan, or not.
We can take a look at that.
Okay.
One of our key objectives is to find out what the employers would want.
Right.
From the people we're training, so this gives us another opportunity to speak to that area with this potential labor pool as a guide.
Yeah. Okay.
And Chief Kugie, I might mention we have also been involved with programs in the past with various paperwork that is quite a bit more significant than what we do with work release. We worked with your one of your schools with some of the kids there, and that took additional paperwork. We worked with Kern High School District in the past with different training programs. So we are used to working with those kind of programs and filling out the proper paperwork, evaluations, those kinds of things. Again, we'd be happy to take a look at that if there's a way we can do that. Probably the biggest issue that we talked about, and even when I talked with Rosemary about this, is how do you incentivize them? Because how do you get them to show up? That's part of the problem. Work release program, they may have 10 people on the roster and 2 people show up. So that is probably the critical issue.
And Bob, I know you mentioned that in the past you had had more of the work release folks helping you, and it was a more successful program where you were able to keep the parks in better condition, and thereby, as we indicated, incentivizing families to be there rather than folks engaged in bad behavior. But that has diminished, and that you see a real need for it now. That
yes.
was your representation to me.
As Supervisor Perez mentioned, the numbers of work release have dropped significantly. We used to have over 100 a day at various sites throughout our locations. We are getting basically less than 10 people show up a day, even though there's more that are on the list. But my understanding, the sheriff is, I guess, working with some other sheriffs throughout the state. Potentially, there may be something that comes through the legislature that brings back that time off or time served. And if that takes place, we expect the numbers probably would go up rather than just walking the streets because they've been let go because of the overcrowding. So potentially that could really help the work-based program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Olin. All right, any other public presentations?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm Jan Castile with New Life, and good morning, Chief and Chief, and Supervisor Perez and Lily and folks. We just want to say that we're happy to have been able to receive funding to work with AB 109 participants. We're basically at full occupancy right now, and our programs are up and running. We have the GED programs during the day and in the evening so that we can get folks who don't have their high school diploma with some education background, and we found out that we really do need a lot of remedial education going on, and they're not just walking into GED and taking GED tests. They really have to start from scratch, and you know, we're happy to be able to provide their services. We have our first mentor and sobriety support groups going on right now. We have AA and NA at our sites, and so, I mean, we're on a roll. And so we've only been in operation for about a month now, but, you know, we're with the challenge, and we think that we can do a good job. And I just want to respond to Park and Rec. We have a captive audience, and we certainly would love to have some of our young men come and do work with your department. You won't have to worry about where they are, because you'll know where they are every day, at least for 6 months. We don't have a large group, but we do have 20 at a time. And we think that them giving back to the community is very worthwhile and very sobering thing for them. So we're here, we're having a workshop on child support and enforcement this Friday. So we want to make sure that our partners know about our workshop, and we'll be continuing to give these kind of insightful workshops for participants so that they can learn how to integrate back into the society, how to work with their families, how to be there for their families, and how to be good citizens. I just want to encourage everyone in terms of this research to remember that our community agencies are out there. We are struggling. We don't have evaluation dollars either. We want to know what works. So when you're thinking about this research, and I really like what Stanford had to say looking at cost allocation for our counties, we know that probation and probation services, which we focus on, are really limited, and we really need to have that kind of reallocation coming on. So our community agencies really support that kind of research to be able to look across the board and see what's going on in other counties. We've done some of our research and we see how the allocation has been, especially the community-based agencies off the hook in Northern California, which has a much lower recidivism rate, much lower felony rate, but they're getting a lot more dollars. And some of the programs that they're providing are Cadillac programs, and we are still VW. You know, in terms of how we are, you know, able to help our people reintegrate into the community. So, again, we are very happy to be able to work with you. We look at this as a community partnership, not just as a contract that we have with you. We want to look at the issues. We want you to know what the issues are. And as time goes by, you know, we'll keep you abreast of what we're finding out. And we're just happy to be able to be of support.
Thank you, Jan. Any questions for Ms. Castillo?
Hopeful Jan and Bob will connect before they leave so that we can get that ball rolling.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Kelly McCormick. I'm with the Women of Worth Recovery House, and we are also one of the providers that were awarded the AB 109 grant, and we're so thankful to be given the opportunity to be part of this project, and we wanted to give you a little update on how it's going so far. We started receiving our first clients on January 16th, and we've had approximately 15 clients referred to us so far from the sheriff and probation. Most of them are coming from the jail on an ankle monitor. Just to say, we have had great cooperation with mental health, EMP, the sheriffs and probation, and we're real optimistic on that. During the first 30 days, it's been approximately 30 days, and what we do is we help them get their IDs, their social security cards, signed up for health insurance, back on their medications if need be, reinstated on SSI if applicable. For those who need jobs, we help them with their resumes, interviewing, job skills, life skills. If they need tutoring, we have tutors come in and help them with adult education, or if they want to prepare for their GED, we help them get signed up for that. We also do have NA on site, Narcotics Anonymous. We have recovery support, domestic violence, anger management, family reunification. We're a real structured sober living environment, and the clients are really responding well. We're real optimistic so far. The attitude's been good. The ladies are so happy, generally, to be given the opportunity. Instead of just sitting in the cell, they're actually given an opportunity to get on their feet before they're just back out on the street. So, again, it's early, still only in the process, but we're real optimistic that this is really going to make an impact in the community. And again, we really appreciate the opportunity. Any questions?
Thank you. Any questions or comments? For
keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
All right. Any other public comments? I see none.
I hope women get to get certifications for irrigation.
Absolutely.
You'll be the first one, Lily.
She already has it.
Okay. My report, I really don't have anything new. You know, there was a little raise in the funding for AB 109, the $77 million that was not accounted for will somehow be divided, and hopefully I will leave that up to Mr. Nylon to report on if he has any information on that, but other than that, I really have nothing. So we'll move on to item number 4, and it's CCP member announcements or reports. Anybody have any reports or comments to make?
I have one quick question, if I could. There's a new phase of this process coming up, which is the parole hearings that are coming up in July. And Mr. Moore has already proposed that we begin to discuss that process, which I think is good. I've met with parole and begun those discussions. The question I have is, as members of this board, do we have any concerns about Brown Act issues when we are meeting to discuss the implementation or processes that we have to go through relative to implementing a new phase? Or can we assume that that's just a normal aspect of our operations and duties, and therefore don't have to have the same obligations to post future committee meetings or anything of that nature?
I think we would still have Brown Act obligations if there's a quorum of the board. I'm not familiar with exactly, I'm still fairly new to this, I'm not familiar exactly what it is you're talking about, but if you have a quorum meeting to come to some kind of concurrence or conclusion, then it would be a Brown Act issue.
Okay. I guess what I recall is if I understand the Board of Supervisors, if two of them get together, they have to have, or two or three of them get together,
three,
that they have to have some notice of that particular meeting. If three board members, just as a function of their normal duties, are getting together to discuss another phase of this process, are we obligated to post that as a subset of this organization?
So you're talking about if you're just meeting as an individual department? I think the problem is going to lie in the fact that we're also part of the CCP, so if we're discussing matters that fall under the jurisdiction of the CCP, that's when, if there is a quorum, you would have to attend that. So
okay.
If you're discussing matters outside of the CCP that are not going to become issues within the CCP or fall under their jurisdiction, it's not an issue.
Okay, thank you.
What would the... would that actually be fall under the CCP, because it's not funded by it? It's just kind of a...
Well, it has impacts, I suspect I have to go back to the mission of the CCP. My first impression is no, this would be a normal course of business for those departments, but I don't want to potentially raise an issue that would adversely reflect on the CCP. So. That I'll go back to the mission as a CCP and see if I can convince myself that just because we're meeting on this next issue, we're outside the scope of the CCP.
Contact if you have any questions.
Fair enough. Okay, thank you.
Well, who do you contemplate being involved in that besides the public defender, the courts, and the district attorney's office?
Well, the question is if we'd want to also, I suspect,
probation
involve probation and parole. And...
this is going to impact probationers. It's going to impact state parole and the people that are going to go
correct.
Through that. So they're not.
Which is not part of the CCP.
So my opinion is there's not a problem and nothing needs to be addressed. If it's just public defender, courts, and the district